Division 1 is now in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. We're here for oral argument in our case number CV240901, Phoenix Motor v. Raja Bion. I know I mispronounced that.
I
was just announcing the case number and name. These proceedings are being video and audio recorded and live streamed, so we ask counsel to please identify yourself and your client at the beginning of your argument. Each side will have up to 20 minutes. You're not obligated to take the entire time, but it's there if you'd like it. Appellant's counsel is responsible to watch the clock if you'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal. Also, please keep in mind that we've read the briefs and we've conferenced the case this morning. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Rob Summers. I represent Dulceria La Bonita Wholesale and Zakia Jacqueline Rajabian. And we are here today on an appeal from a judgment granting Phoenix Motor Company summary judgment on its conversion claim against Dulceria and Mrs. Rajabian. The vehicle at issue in this case is a 2021 Mercedes G63 AMG. Phoenix Motor claims it purchased the vehicle by purchasing it from Wholesale Exotics on October 27th, 2021, who then agreed to purchase it from Melissa Karam on October 29th, 2021. And Ms. Karam is allegedly an associate of Mr. Aljundi, who then sent Mr. Katukian to purchase the Mercedes from Mercedes-Benz of Chandler on November 5th, 2021. So instead of delivering the vehicle to Wholesale Exotics or Phoenix Motor, Mr. Katukian traded the vehicle in to Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale, who then sold the vehicle to Dulceria and Mrs. Rajabian. So Dulceria and Mrs. Rajabian are the legal owners of the vehicle because they received delivery of the vehicle from Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale on February 28, 2022. Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale received delivery from Mr. Katukian on January 28, 2022. And Mr. Katukian received delivery of the Mercedes-Benz of Chandler on November 5, 2021. And Mercedes-Benz of Chandler received delivery of the vehicle from the manufacturer on approximately October 27, 2021. Also, the official title to the vehicle from the state of Arizona passed from Mr. Katukian on December 3rd, 2021. And then he passed it to Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale when he traded in the vehicle. And then Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale passed that legal certificate of title to the appellants.
Counsel, there's been a lot of briefing in this case. There was a significant amount of energy expended on the proposition that ownership doesn't always track with title. You're the title owner, and you just said, you know, we really own it. We have title. Can you explain the extent to which, in our law, title and ownership can diverge, and why they should not in this case, in your view?
Well, Your Honor, ownership of a vehicle is defined actually by statute. Under Arizona law, an owner of a vehicle is a person who holds the legal title of a vehicle, and that's ARS 28-101-59A. So just from a statutory standpoint, the definition of the owner of a vehicle is the person who holds the legal title. Now, the question is, how do you get legal title? Well, for one, you can only get legal title from somebody who has title. And in this case, Wholesale Exotics did not have title, didn't have possession, was a complete stranger to the vehicle on October 27th, 2021, when it made the purchase transaction with Phoenix Motor Company and took its money, you know, for the vehicle and cashed it on October 28th, 2021. So that's ARS 47-2403A says a purchaser of goods acquires all title which his transferor had or had power to transfer. So Wholesale Exotics could not transfer the Mercedes-Benz of Chandler title to Phoenix Motor Company on October 27th or 8th, 2021. Mercedes-Benz of Chandler had no idea that transaction was even taking place.
And you really walk to the point that I'll just tell all of you, at least for me individually, is of greatest concern here. I'm looking at the court's summary judgment ruling, and it said Phoenix Motor's ownership interest accrued on October 28th, the date WE cashed Phoenix Motor's check and sent Phoenix Motor a wholesale bill of sale. Now, that would be news to the dealership where the car was sitting. So I guess I'm wondering, between October 28 and November 5, is the idea under this order that nobody could have gone on the lot and bought it before Mr. Katukian? Or if they did, they were thieves? Is that what this order means?
Well, that is the exact problem with the order. The repercussions of the order are that if Title left Mercedes-Benz of Chandler the day that Wholesale Exotics sold it to Phoenix Motor Company, then Phoenix Motor Company could have gone to Chandler the next day and said, please give me my vehicle, without making any payment to Chandler, without Chandler even knowing that the transaction had taken place. They could have just showed up with a tow truck and hauled it off. And as you pointed out, Your Honor, that if any buyer had come to purchase the vehicle after the 28th, according to the court's ruling, any person who would have paid Chandler for that vehicle stole the vehicle.
Or maybe Chandler stole the vehicle by continuing to hold on to it.
Well, that would also be quite an absurd result, to say that you have a vehicle you bought from the manufacturer, preparing it for retail sale, and somebody unbeknownst to you transfers your title away by paying somebody else for your vehicle and not paying you for it.
Now they say in their brief that the reason this makes sense is because they denominate it as a wholesale transaction, and they tell us that the law treats a wholesale transaction differently. Can you speak to that, please?
There's not a single statute, there's not a single case that says that a wholesale transaction allows a car dealer to sell inventory from another car dealer's lot. The ARS 47-2401, paragraph 2, says that unless otherwise explicitly agreed, title passes to the buyer at the time and place at which the seller completes his performance with reference to physical delivery of the goods. Wholesale Exotics could not and did not deliver the goods to Phoenix Motor Company. There's no way Phoenix Motor Company could have obtained legal title to that vehicle, or equitable title to the vehicle for that matter, by paying Wholesale Exotics, because Wholesale Exotics didn't own it, had no rights to it, and Chandler had absolutely no role in that transaction whatsoever, and they were undisputedly, at that time, was the legal title holder.
Why did they not obtain equitable title when it passed into Mr. Katukian's hands?
I don't know what the grounds would be for that, because they had a wholesale bill of sale contractual relationship with Wholesale Exotics. They had no relationship with Mr. Katukian. He was not an agent.
Right.
They responded in a discovery request. We specifically asked that question, was Mr. Katukian your agent? And they said no. And we think they had to say no because this was a fraudulent transaction. They were trying to get Chandler to sell the vehicle to Katukian to then pass it to Phoenix Motor, because Chandler gave a declaration stating that they would not have sold the vehicle to Katukian.
Well, his argument is that when he fails to deliver it, he's then stolen the vehicle.
And he could not have stolen the vehicle because he held legal title. He bought it through a vehicle purchase order. It was paid for by AMK Consulting. And he got the legal title and possession. That's legal title. There's no way to say that him going to Chandler and buying the vehicle with a vehicle purchase order and paying for it somehow amounts to a theft, unless you have to first make that error that Phoenix Motor received title the minute they paid Wholesale Exotics for it.
What does the record say about any agreement between Mr. Katukian and Wholesale Exotics about delivering the vehicle at a date certain?
There is none. The bill of sale is from Melissa Karam, who is alleged to be an associate of Mr. Aljundi and Mr. Katukian, and she gave a California bill of sale document that says nothing about the timing of delivery, how delivery is made, when title, you know, changes hands, none of that. But we cited the California statutes.
Is Mr. Katukian a party to that document?
No, he's not. And he's also not, he never gave any sort of document to anybody in this case except Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale when he traded it in. So from the time he purchased it, the very next transaction was him trading it into Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale. And, of course, they did the usual title transfers. He received credit against a trade-in, $235,000. And that's how the title, you know, went from him to them. And there's it's undisputed that Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale was a bona fide purchaser for value. They had no notice, you know, no information about these prior transactions occurring. You know, so there's no accusation that Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale was somehow complicit or an accomplice in the fraud being committed by Katukian or Aljundi.
Do we know whether Mr. Katukian had notice about the transaction between Wholesale Exotics and Phoenix Motor Company?
Well, he certainly would have.
Okay.
But that shouldn't really factor into the title.
So he was not an innocent purchaser?
Well, when you say an innocent purchaser, he bought the vehicle directly from the person who had legal title.
Right.
And there's no way for Phoenix Motor to have had any sort of title, legal or equitable, because it will only come from Wholesale Exotics. So you really have two completely different sets of transactions going on there, and there's no connection that says that somehow Mr. Katukian, by his failure to deliver the vehicle to Wholesale Exotics, somehow amounts to a theft of the vehicle.
Do we know whether Mr. Katukian had noticed that Wholesale Exotics expected him to deliver the vehicle to it?
I'm sure he did have that knowledge.
Okay.
But again, his role would have been as a buyer and seller. You know, he had just acquired the property after the contract to purchase was entered into. Therefore, he's simply a seller who has to go and purchase the merchandise that he's selling, right? And then he has to deliver it. And that's why under ARS 2401, if you don't deliver the vehicle, you haven't transferred title. So it doesn't matter if Phoenix Motor claims that they paid for it. It doesn't matter if Wholesale Exotics claim they paid for it. Until the vehicle is actually delivered to the buyer, the seller still holds legal title.
So you're saying they're kind of on the horns of a dilemma, because on one hand, it would be a fraudulent transaction, but to avoid it being a fraudulent transaction, they have to disclaim agency with Katukian, but really he's the faithless principal and their real problem is with him, but they can't say that, because otherwise they'd be walking into this fraudulent transaction problem. That's kind of what you're saying.
Well, and that's why they structured the transaction exactly the way they did. Hmm. You know, why did an Arizona car dealer buy a car from another Arizona car dealer by hiring a California car dealer, prepaying for the car, them hiring another car dealer from California to then come to Arizona to buy the vehicle as a retail purchaser at the retail purchase price, avoid paying the sales tax, which they could have avoided by just doing a wholesale transaction directly with Chandler. But they avoided the sales tax, and it was going to go back to California and then back to Arizona. Well, it was clearly to dupe Chandler. You know, that was the whole purpose of it. So any sort of claim of equitable title should be, you know, undone by this. The whole nature of the transaction was fraudulent. You know, this unclean hands would factor in at that point.
How did they avoid sales tax? Because it's from California?
Because Mr. Katukian bought it as an individual, as an out-of-state, so he signed a declaration saying, I don't have to pay sales tax.
Yeah, okay.
Can you comment on the relationship between the Arizona Supreme Court order in this case and the sanction piece of the judgment?
The sanction?
Well, your client was sanctioned.
Well, we were sanctioned for filing a meritorious motion to dismiss at the same time that we filed a motion for summary judgment. Mm-hmm. And the court, for some reason, after being told by the Court of Appeal or the Supreme Court that the TRO needed to be dissolved because it was illegal, and that was one of the points of our motion to dismiss, still said, no, I'm still going to sanction you even though you already won on the issue in the motion to dismiss at the Supreme Court level.
Can you explain more fulsomely, because I'm going to ask them to respond to it, how the Arizona Supreme Court's order amounts to endorsing the legal theory of your dispositive motion? Could you unpack that, please?
Right. So the issue before the Supreme Court was, can you issue a temporary restraining order that gives somebody possession of a vehicle pending the outcome of the litigation? And the answer was no. The remedy for that is replevin action. You have to do a replevin action. You can't say to the court, here's my ex parte TRO with a $30,000 bond, and just give me that car, and we'll worry about the rest later. No, that's a replevin action, and that's what the Supreme Court held.
Okay.
So I'd like to reserve.
Your client didn't have notice that their vehicle was about to be taken out of the storage unit.
Correct, Your Honor. The first thing they heard about any of this litigation or any of this was when they were told by the storage unit that their car was being, you know, towed away.
Okay.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my
time.
Thank
you.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Morning, I'm Larry Cohen, counsel for Phoenix Motor Company, and I certainly know what my questions are going to be about.
So, counsel, With apologies for jumping right in, I tried to be clear and sort of give you 15 minutes to think about it. Can you please speak to sort of, I think, the existential problem with your side's position, which is the Superior Court thinks you got title on October 28. How can that be, given that the vehicle sat on the lot for a week with nobody, you know, cluing in the dealership that then owned it, that title had passed, and the kind of conceptual problem that anybody coming onto the lot buying it is a thief for the next week? Can you help me understand how any of that can be so?
Sure. And with the greatest respect, Your Honor, the Superior Court did not find that we had title. The Superior Court found that we were the owners. This action...
Okay.
It's a very big difference, Your Honor, because they've spent the entire case arguing that because they have title, they're the owners and the discussion is closed. And our argument throughout the case has been that we are the owners of the vehicle and that to the extent they have title, title is effective in establishing ownership except as to the rightful owner of the vehicle. It stands first as to them. So that's why the distinction is important.
Let me take your correction. I just said you're right, so I take your correction, counsel. So let me try it again.
I wasn't being disrespectful, Your Honor.
No. I, it's a good correction. I agree with you. You're right. It's ownership. So same problem. So how can it be that you owned the vehicle on October 28 through November 5 with no one telling the dealership where the vehicle sat? And how could it then be that no one else can walk in and buy that vehicle off the lot during the next week without being a thief? Same question.
So the answer is the nature of the transaction involved, Your Honor. It's a wholesale transaction. I suppose that if someone had walked in and they had bought the vehicle off the lot, the wholesale transaction would have been frustrated by the inability to acquire the vehicle, and that would have closed out the case. But the story doesn't stop there. The reason we're here today is because of how the process proceeded. So
somebody else could have bought the vehicle, just not Katukian?
Someone else could have bought the vehicle, in which case the effort to buy the vehicle would have been frustrated. But that's not the end of the story, Your Honor. I mean, that one bit of time doesn't account for how we are where we are. So if I could expand on that, please. But
before you move on, how can you own the vehicle? I guess it's contingent ownership. It's contingent on Mr. Katukian being the purchaser.
We retained an expert for the case, Scott Ailes. His declaration, which I'm sure Your Honors have looked at, is in the index at either 136 or 137. The way in which this played out is the most common way in which wholesale transactions happen in this country. That, by the way, is the only evidence that you have on that subject. No, there was no evidence from anyone else, nor was the AADA brief discussed it at all. But this is a wholesale transaction, and the way these transactions proceed is as the way this one proceeded here. And I suppose if someone had walked into the lot in Chandler and for whatever reason bought the vehicle and was gone, we'd be having a discussion of a different sort, but that's not what happened.
But they can't really do that because you owned it. That's what you're saying.
Well,
so you already owned it.
Our argument is that we owned it subject to being purchased, picked up, and with our money and going from there. The key on our ownership, Your Honor, is the money trail. And the money trail was very explicitly laid out for the Superior Court as part of our presentation at the oral argument before the Superior Court. And you see from the money trail that Phoenix Motor Company delivers a payment to Wholesale Exotics. Wholesale Exotics contacts Mr. Aljunde and Mr. Katukian, who at that point are working through Ms. Karam in California. All of this is laid out in you were asked how these people are all involved. There's a declaration from Mr. Cunningham. There's a deposition from Mr. Cunningham. And in that, he describes how he engaged Mr. Katukian and Mr. Aljunde to buy this vehicle, that they agreed that it would be purchased through Wholesale Exotics, with whom Phoenix Motor Company had done other like deals, and that the money would go to Wholesale Exotics, who had provided to Mr. Aljunde, which was done through Ms. Karam. He would then buy the vehicle. He and or Mr. Katukian would buy the vehicle. They would take the vehicle, deliver it back to Wholesale Exotics, who would deliver it to my client. So the money was delivered contemporaneously with the bill of sale from Mr. Aljunde through Ms. Karam. And again, we literally walk the money through by showing the bank account where the money went and the amounts of the money that go through. Mr. Aljunde does what he's supposed to do, pursuant to the deal that's laid out in the Mr. Cunningham's deposition, which you have, and in Mr. Cunningham's declaration, which you have, and they go through and they purchase the vehicle. So what happens to the vehicle at that point? No guessing is needed. You have in your records a text message or a couple of text messages from Mr. Katukian in which he says, "We're stealing your vehicle. We're taking it. We're not delivering it to you. Sorry, it didn't work out." So it clearly at that point becomes a stolen vehicle.
Well, that's the problem you have with Katukian. It's very hard to understand how it's an antecedent claim of ownership before Katukian even gets title.
Well, the ownership, because of the nature of the wholesale transaction, is established at the time that the money is delivered, and the court found that at that point we had paid for this, and pursuant to way the a wholesale transaction to carry it out, we became the owner of the vehicle.
Now, but you didn't pay anybody who already owned it.
That's
the problem, right? You didn't pay anybody who owned it. All this money moving back and forth
because
in October is not paid to anybody who then owns it.
Because of wholesale transactions, Your Honor, mm-hmm. that's the way these processes go.
Okay. So if a group of us got together and decided to go over to the parking lot outside the Scottsdale Fashion Mall, if we denominate our effort to buy something in the mall wholesale, we can acquire an ownership interest in any object in the mall as long as we call it a wholesale?
No, Your Honor, but that's why I said it's the process of this transaction, which involves an exchange of money that goes through the individuals. An individual identified, he picks up the vehicle, he brings it back, he delivers it to the person who gave him the money. There's a bill of sale that's already been exchanged, and the vehicle comes to us. We then have physical possession of the vehicle, and we go on from there.
Why not sue Katukian instead of those people? I mean, it seems to be a real problem with Katukian. I mean, if I'm you guys, I'm mad at Katukian. I get that.
So we did name Katukian. He is
right.
A party in the lawsuit.
Right.
They're a party because they took possession of a vehicle that we owned. Now, you said you wouldn't have a problem with Mr. Katukian because he had the money and he had our vehicle. All right? So there'd be no question if he were sitting here about whether or not we have a proper conversion claim against him. Well, what is conversion? Conversion is essentially you can take possession and control that which is ours. So Mr. Katukian took possession and had control of that which is ours. He then takes that vehicle, which is a stolen vehicle, he gives it or delivers it as part of a trade to Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale. And again, the money flow is all established clearly in the record, and they take it. They are now in possession of somebody else's vehicle, not Mr. Katukian's vehicle, our vehicle. Mr. Katukian has stolen the vehicle from us, has withheld his possession of it, which is classic conversion, and he's now passed it along to them. They now have a stolen vehicle.
Can you respond to their point that you have dirty hands in the transaction because it's essentially a fraudulent transaction because of the efforts to conceal your principal's identity from the dealership that originally owned it?
It's a great story he told you. There's nothing in the record establishing that it was a fraudulent transaction. They have called it such.
So why didn't your client walk into the dealership in Chandler and buy the car? We wouldn't be here right now.
Well, that issue has not been developed for purposes of the underlying case. I could do what they did, which is go beyond the record and tell you things that you won't be able to use in your opinion, I presume, because they're not part of the record below. But the issue had to do with the availability of these vehicles and the getting access to them, and so they chose to get a vehicle if you read the declaration, you'll see that Mr. Aljunde actually came to them and said, I have access to one of these, they're called G-Wagons, mm-hmm. and I can purchase it for you. Would you like me to do that? And Mr. Cunningham said, sure. There's nothing in the record to indicate that at the time that was done, he knew that they were going this route, but what mattered was is that we were dealing with the period of time when the microchips were unavailable because of a shortage of them, and so there were fewer and fewer of these luxury vehicles, and the price was very high, and it was going up very quickly.
I mean, does the record reflect that your client knew this G-Wagon was sitting on the lot at a different Mercedes-Benz dealership?
I think, they would have known it was sitting on the lot of a Mercedes-Benz dealership because it was a brand new vehicle,
right.
And so that's the only people who would be selling it. But again, there's nothing in the record to indicate that what they did was deceitful. They can call it that if they'd like, and the AADA can call it deceitful if they'd like, but there's nothing in the record to establish it was deceitful. It's simply a way of trying to throw mud at my client. Our preference is to focus on what happened here. And you said you wouldn't have a problem with having Mr. Katukian here because he stole the vehicle.
No, okay. I didn't assert that Mr. Katukian stole the deal.
He stole your money.
I said that if I was you guys, I'd be upset with Katukian, and he seems like a principal acting on your behalf who has not done what you expected him to do, and I think that's a fair thing for you to be upset about.
Right, but the vehicle was a stolen vehicle. It's clearly in the record that it was stolen by him. He passes along this stolen vehicle to Mercedes-Benz of Scottsdale, who in turn passes this stolen vehicle on to them. And our argument is simply that they are in possession of a stolen vehicle. It's our vehicle. We paid for it with our money.
So he never owned it. Katukian never owned it.
He didn't personally own it. He was working with our money, and that's what the record clearly shows.
Because he was your principal. He was working on your behalf, like as an agent.
Well, he was acting on our behalf. I agree with that, Your Honor. And if the evidence hasn't been developed in this case, so it wasn't explored in the court below. But I'm hesitant to jump into calling.
Did you disclaim agency?
I'm sorry.
Did you disclaim that Mr. Katukian was the agent of Wholesale Exotics?
I don't recall. I didn't look at the interrogatories. Those were a few years old, Mr. I'm sorry. I'm so focused on you, I'm forgetting his name. But counsel, how about that? Counsel represents that it did. And we may well have said that he wasn't our agent, but he was acting on our behalf in getting the vehicle. I'd like to come back to the fact that he had a stolen vehicle. He stole it. He wrote us a message and said, we've taken your vehicle. We're not delivering it to you. So now, having not delivered it to us, we have a converted vehicle. And the vehicle then passes along to them, and they pass it along to Dulceria.
What if I think he stole your money and used your stolen money to purchase a vehicle? Can you still get to the same
place?
Not,
he took our money and with the money purchased a vehicle and had the vehicle. It was a vehicle that he delivered. It wasn't money that he delivered to Mercedes-Benz of North Scottsdale. It was a vehicle. So he had our vehicle, and that's what he delivered. He didn't deliver money. And so it doesn't go into that line of cases that talks about money. It goes into those line of cases that deals with vehicles, because that's what happened here.
Did you report it stolen to the Scottsdale
Ultimately,
police?
Ultimately, we did report it stolen.
And what was their response?
What was whose response?
The police.
That you've reported a stolen vehicle to us. By the time the police were doing their investigation, we were able to locate the vehicle in a storage cube relatively nearby, as described, and we then contacted the court and proceed with the TRO. I'd love to comment, Your Honor. I know that we're pursuing this line of discussion, but just so I don't not get it in, I'd like to comment on your question about the Supreme Court ruling and the elaboration that counsel provided you. I'm sure you've looked at the ruling. The ruling says nothing along the lines of what he said. The issue had to do with, that went to the court, with whether a TRO was an appropriate way to take temporary possession of a vehicle pending the resolution of the underlying case. And the court said a TRO is not appropriate. It said you need to proceed by replevin. Replevin for the temporary ownership of the vehicle. We were pursuing a conversion action. And so we proceeded with the conversion action and explored and pursued our argument that we were the owners, we had the right to possession, and therefore damages. That's the way that we pursued it.
You didn't have a separate claim in your complaint for temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction?
We had an it was initially filed as a TRO, and of course the complaint with a conversion action associated with it.
So in the complaint it says caused two, for example, TRO or...
Yeah, it probably was cause one, Your Honor.
So they moved to dismiss that, though, because the Supreme Court has said that's not a viable way to proceed in this particular
case. Well, they moved to dismiss it, and the court did not dismiss it. They then went to the Court of Appeals, which did not accept their argument. They then went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said that for purposes of... The Supreme Court said you should, rejected the TRO and said you should proceed by replevin.
So why at that point are they not proper in moving to dismiss the cause of action for a TRO or other injunctive relief?
Why are they not doing that?
Why are they violating Rule 11 by doing that?
It wasn't Rule 11. It was ARS 12-349, and the issue had nothing to do with the replevin. If you go back and look at the record, you'll see it had absolutely nothing to do with that. What it had to do with is that they were firing off motion after motion after motion in the court, and the judge was ruling on them. She ruled on it an issue, and within a week after her having ruled on that issue, they filed another motion that raised exactly the same issue. And this is, again, after having a motion after motion in which they raise essentially the same issue. So now she's ruled, they now file a motion on essentially the same issue, and the judge said that that was implicated 12349 and awarded sanction to that, that she did not award sanction under Rule 11. It had nothing to do with the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah,
that was long before that.
I misspoke on Rule 11.
So that's the way that proceeded.
The court seemed to take exception to them
filing
a motion for summary judgment and a motion to dismiss on the same legal basis, and found that to be the 349 problem. That's what you're saying.
The 349 problem, Your Honor, was not. I mean, the judge definitely mentioned that they were doing the same thing, but the sanctions had to do with the fact that she had just ruled on the same issue on another motion, not a summary judgment motion. I believe it was a motion that was filed by Mr. Koutoukian's attorney. The same issue presented the same way that they
Koutoukian's motion.
I'm sorry?
You're saying, you just said the trial court sanctioned them for filing a motion that was of the same type as Koutoukian's denied motion. That is what you are saying.
Not the same type, Your Honor. It was the exact same argument.
Fine. Koutoukian's motion.
I'm sorry.
It was Koutoukian's motion, right?
Koutoukian had filed a motion. They had filed on this issue in other filings.
Right.
So they had raised the same issue in other filings that they filed, but she had just ruled on exactly the same issue that they now filed a motion on.
Okay,
and
thank
so,
you.
And at the same time, they also filed for summary judgment. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting your
No, thanks apologize. For the clarification. Thanks for straightening us out on that. You have more time. Sorry.
This is all very Kafkaesque to me.
I'm sorry?
This is all very Kafkaesque to me. You wake up one morning and your vehicle is missing out of your garage. Next thing you know, you're being sued for conversion and being found guilty. I understand you all have an expert who says this is the way wholesale transactions are done. We also have the Auto Dealers Association saying if you do what you all are asking us to do in this case, it's going to create chaos. So can you square that for us?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Again, I'll mention it again, but then I'll focus on your response because I want to make sure the other part gets in. The vehicle was a stolen vehicle as to Mr. Koutoukian. He passed a stolen vehicle on to Mercedes-Benz of Scottsdale, North Scottsdale. They passed it along to Dulceria. There's a number of cases that we've identified that say when something is when you receive stolen property, the best you have is ownership subject to the owner of the vehicle. And so if you're going to have a problem, Mr. Koutoukian, the same problem applies if you move along from one to the other. They all have a stolen vehicle, and the only issue under Arizona law, we go to the Butler case, Chevrolet case, there's even a new case that's just come out that wasn't cited in our briefing, the Ferring case, the Price case, the Wallace case, and now there's a case out of the district court, I don't have it in front of me, it's Cabrillo, I think is the name of it, all say the same thing, that the person who takes stolen property, pays for stolen property, acquires stolen property, has ownership over it except to the actual owner. So if Mr. Koutoukian was subject to conversion, he passes along because he had stolen property, he passed it along. Let me come back now to your...
On the stolen thing, you just suggested something that at least it never occurred to me, which is the police never determined that it was stolen, but you have a summary judgment ruling indicating that it was stolen. What is the date on which the court first adjudicated the vehicle stolen?
Stolen might have been a strong word. It was a vehicle that we contend belonged to us that they were holding against our interest. That's conversion.
Well, you called it stolen about 10 or 15 times, counsel. So when did the court determine that in your favor? Because I think the court did.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah, I said you...
I'm just having a little trouble here.
Sure, I'm sorry, I'll be louder. You've said probably 10 or 12 times that the vehicle was stolen, and I think that the trial court agrees with you. When is the date when the court determined the vehicle was stolen?
When did the court determine it was stolen?
Yes.
Are you asking me, Your Honor, on what date was it stolen?
No. I'm asking you the date on which the court determined the vehicle was stolen.
Okay, the court's ruling was sometime in the latter part of January.
Of 23?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So when they took title, this vehicle was not adjudicated stolen, right?
No, they took title of a vehicle that was in the world, a stolen vehicle.
So I'm sorry. Let me make it easier. I apologize. Bad question. My bad. When was the date they bought the vehicle?
February 2nd or 3rd, somewhere in there. 22, I think, Your Honor.
22. So before the vehicle was adjudicated stolen or determined by the police to be stolen, is that correct?
I'm sorry. The vehicle was, we didn't find the vehicle until about March of 2022, and my time is up, so I'll finish answering your question. I'm sorry I won't be able to answer yours, Judge Catlett. But the vehicle was purchased by them in February. We found it, like I said, in a storage locker in March using the technology that was available. I won't be able to answer your question. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It happens.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
So I think what Mr. Cohen is failing to recognize or articulate is the principle of a resulting trust. When he says that I gave somebody my money so that they could go buy something for me, and that person took title to that thing, it became mine. That's not the law. The law is that Mr. Katukian held legal title, and even if we believe everything they say about tracing money, money that was paid to Wholesale Exotics, that was then paid to AMK Consulting, that was then paid to Mercedes-Benz of Chandler, the best case he could possibly make at that moment in time is a resulting trust, which gives you equitable title to the property, not legal title. And the law says that a trustee of any trust, you know, a constructive trust or resulting trust, can transfer that legal title to a bona fide purchaser for value. They do not have legal title in the person who gave them the money. And this is consistent with ARS 47-2403 called power to transfer, good faith purchase of goods, and entrusting. And a person with voidable title has power to transfer a good title to a good faith purchaser for value. That is exactly what his ultimate argument leads to, is we think we had some sort of equitable title or some right to this vehicle or some ownership interest in this vehicle the moment Mr. Katukian took our money and bought it from this other dealership. Fine, you have a resulting trust. The result is that Mr. Katukian can then sell that vehicle to a bona fide purchaser for value, and that person takes title to that property free and clear of any other interest in the property. It still leaves them with a breach of contract claim against Wholesale Exotics. It still leaves Wholesale Exotics with a breach of contract claim against this Melissa Karam or Katukir Aljundi. But what it doesn't give them is the right to go to the buyer of that product and say, no, I know you're a bona fide purchaser for value, but that's actually mine. I deserve to have that product. And the other thing that I don't know if we've actually gotten into this, but we did talk a little bit about entrusting of the vehicle, where they're saying, okay, if Mr. Katukian is your principal, you know, he's your agent, he went out and did this for you, right? Well, that would be an admission that you entrusted the vehicle's possession and title to a merchant. It's undisputed that Mr. Katukian and Mr. Aljundi were merchants in the business of buying and selling luxury automobiles. And when you entrust that title to that merchant has all the power to transfer that title to a bona fide purchaser for value. So we still get to the same place. Mr. Katukian held a legal title, and he was able to transfer it to a bona fide purchaser, whether it's because, you know, it was he had it as a resulting trust because, you know, he was using somebody else's money to buy it, or if it was because they entrusted the possession of the vehicle to him. And that's exactly what's in that Sears Finance Corp versus Thunderbird Products case, where Thunderbird had an interest in this boat. It tried to repossess the boat, and it entrusted the possession and title to the boat to a dealer, D&J Marine. D&J Marine went and sold the boat, and they weren't supposed to sell the boat. They were supposed to store the boat, but they sold the boat, and the buyer financed it through Sears Finance, who had no knowledge of the interest of Thunderbird in the boat as a financer. And then when Thunderbird went and took the boat back from D&J, who failed to deliver it to its purchaser, Sears sued Thunderbird and said, hey, I have the security interest in that boat, you don't. And the court held quite clearly that when Thunderbird entrusted the possession and title of that boat with D&J Marine, it empowered that merchant to transfer any title to that boat to a bona fide purchaser for value. That would be the same thing we would have here. Mr. Katukian, Mr. Aljundi were sent off to, you know, as merchants to go buy this property and deliver it, which means they knew they were going to have possession, they knew they were going to have title.
Is this the argument you didn't make below?
No, this is an argument we did make below.
You did, okay.
This is mostly made in the second motion for summary judgment. So if you'll recall, the Mercedes-Benz Financial Services filed a summary judgment motion that we joined, and that was the second, you know, erroneous ruling where the court simply doubled down on the on the first line of reasoning.
Okay. On indispensable party, because I know you make that argument, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, your argument is your client might have a claim against MB North Scottsdale for breach of title, I guess, or warranty of title.
That's right, Your Honor.
And therefore, they had to bring MB North Scottsdale in as a party. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. It's very curious that, both North Scottsdale and Chandler were not brought in as, parties to this alleged chain of, stolen
vehicles. Couldn't your client have brought them, brought third-party MB North Scottsdale in as a party?
Well, we actually tried, and the court denied our effort to do that.
Okay.
But she mainly did it based on timeliness. She said it's too late now.
Okay.
But we did think about, obviously we didn't want to be inconsistent with our arguments, right? Because we're arguing that Phoenix Motor Company never had title to this vehicle, then, and we have proper title. Well, how could I, in the same litigation, say, but I'm going to sue North Scottsdale for breach of warranty of title and try to just put myself as almost like an interpleader, right? Saying somehow I need to win.
You can plead in the alternative.
Right, but it felt very inconsistent at the time, especially when North Scottsdale had done nothing wrong. And if we had lost the claim against North Scottsdale based on the warranty of title issue that we're planning to win against Phoenix Motor, now we have to pay their attorney's fees and all sorts of things, right?
Right.
So the risk assessment was to just stick with the what we thought was the correct law.
I understand.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Mr. Summers.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both for your written briefs and for your argument here today. You've given us much to consider. We'll go ahead and take the matter under advisement and issue a written ruling in due course. And with that, we're adjourned.